This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. In cities across the U.S., most people take for granted having 24/7 access to high-speed internet. But for many residents of rural Wisconsin, broadband is a continued challenge. 23% of the state's population is underserved when it comes to internet services, while some residents in southwestern Wisconsin still don't have access to wired internet. Today is the fifth show in our monthly series on regional infrastructure systems. Joining us to talk about the state of broadband infrastructure in southwestern Wisconsin are Steve Schneider, President and CEO of Bug Tussle Wireless, Emily Roseski, Member Relations Manager for Vernon Communications Cooperative, and Chris Marion, Lafayette County Supervisor and Business Owner. And first, I just want to have each of you, tell us a little bit about, kind of who you are and the organization or community you represent. So, Steve, if you want to start by kind of introducing yourself.
I founded Bug Tussle Wireless back in 2003, and our purpose really was to provide services to rural Wisconsin that were not being provided by other carriers. And often what we would do is fill in the cracks for the larger national carriers where someone didn't have cell service or someone didn't have broadband service. And as the years have progressed, different technologies have changed, so what may have been filled in at one point becomes a gap with a new technology. So our whole purpose is in creating a level playing field for economic development in rural areas. And we believe that wireless communications and access to broadband really is one of the ways that you can create that level playing field. I grew up on a farm in Manitowoc County, and we still don't have broadband on our farm. We didn't have cellular service. We didn't have a lot of services when I was in grade school and high school that the quote-unquote city kids had. And so it's been my drive to get services to rural areas. So it's rare that we'll serve a community over 5 to 10,000 people. The majority of our services are in townships and villages and communities under 2,500.
And so you guys are based out of Green Bay, and I'm sure you serve, kind of that area. But what other kind of areas are you in the state?
Sure. We are really throughout rural Wisconsin. We do have spectrum ownership in other states, the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, southern Minnesota, some in South Dakota. Again, areas that tend to be underserved where people have an expectation that service may not be up to par, and we like to provide the surprise of actually getting service into those areas. So we do a little bit of fiber optics, but we more partner with landline phone companies, typically independent phone companies, to provide the fiber optic service to the towers. But we're totally dedicated to wireless services. We tend to partner with national carriers and with local companies. Three out of the four national carriers are customers of ours where we will provide services to them. We tend to provide some efficiency by using our tower to provide services for multiple carriers versus building three or four or five towers in the same spot that you see in some locations, particularly where different types of technologies over the years where each company had their own stick in the air, if you will.
Emily, tell us a little bit about kind of Vernon Communication Cooperative's kind of role in the broadband conversation.
Sure. I like to think that we're definitely forward thinking in that conversation. We're a cooperative. We have over 7,000 members, mainly in rural southwestern Vernon County, Richland, a little bit of Richland County, Monroe County. And I think our focus has been on building fiber to all of our members, which is kind of a unusual place to be, I've determined, for a lot of companies. But I think because we're member-focused, I think our goal is to be able to provide service for them in the coming years. And I think that's really where the question of broadband infrastructure is there's technology out there that can provide the service that you need today. But what does tomorrow look like? And what does the smart home look like? And telemedicine? Broadband really is the infrastructure that we need to communicate and keep rural America communicating with at the same level that all of the urban areas are doing that. And so we've built fiber to most of our rural members. I think by the end of the year, we'll have that completely done. And then we still have the communities that we're working in. So we decided to focus our energies on building fiber to our members that had the toughest time getting service. So the ones that were on the dead ends and the longest rural routes. And now we're kind of bringing it back around and finishing up our communities. So our goal is to be completely fiber to all of our members within the next couple years.
And Chris, you know, tell us a little bit about yourself and kind of how you came to be part of this kind of broadband conversation.
It's a fascinating conversation. And I think what's key here, and I think has already come out in the conversation, is just how confusing it is for a layperson or a politician who's semi-layperson to understand the whole the technology issues and the future issues, while knowing that people just need some service now. It's tough. So I am a farmer, organic market grower, but also a bed and breakfast owner in rural Blanchardville. So I personally in my business have a need to be connected to the internet every day. I do only direct marketing. So it's me being able to tell my story every single day through pictures on Facebook and a blog is key to having a business. And then I'm also on the Lafayette County Board, and in my role there, you juggle a lot of different priorities, trying to keep people moving toward the future in a rural community and exploring new opportunities and not just sort of resting on our laurels from the past. And needing to engage with new technologies, well, maybe not understanding them. I will say that our county board are not all even reachable through email. So having a conversation with leaders in our community is sometimes tough when they don't completely understand what's at stake for the general population.
And we definitely want to talk more about kind of Lafayette County's story with broadband access. But, you know, first I want to take a moment to kind of explain what broadband is, because I think it's a term but used by, you know, lawmakers, advocates. But as Chris mentioned, it can be kind of confusing. So, you know, Emily, can you explain, you know, kind of what does broadband entail? You know, what does that actually mean?
Yeah, I mean, I think the way that people relate it the best is kind of just a lot of internet service is, you know, if you want to bring it down to layman's terms, a lot of it's like the level of bandwidth that you can get over your connection. So it used to be telephone companies, you know, we were a telephone company, it was copper, and how much could you transfer over that that technology. And now it's, you know, fiber is the in-ground technology. And again, how much bandwidth, how much data can you get from point A to point B? So whether you're sending an email to someone, whether you're downloading a file, you're pulling information or you're sending information kind of over a pipeline. And so that's kind of how we like to describe it to people when they come in to talk to us about what it is. And then bringing it down to, again, kind of internet is usually the term a lot of people like to use.
Yeah, and I know that there are different, you know, tiers when it comes to broadband. There are obviously different speeds. And Steve, if you can kind of, you know, break down what the most basic kind of tiers in broadband are.
Sure. Expectations have changed dramatically over the last 20 years. I go back to where people had 2,400 baud modems and thought that was all we'd ever need, and then we could get to 70 kilobytes per second and thought that was lightning speed. And, you know, right now the minimum speed regulatorily to be considered broadband is 25 megabytes per second. So you'll see a lot of gravitation toward 25 megabyte tiers. Not everybody needs 25 megabytes right now, though, and there's different applications. So, you know, if you're sitting in your home and you have your fiber connection, you may need 25, you may need more, particularly if you have a number of teenagers gaming at the same time and a video coming in on several feeds. But my parents, for instance, in their 80s, they probably don't need 25 meg, but at this point, really the minimum is probably a 1 or 2 meg rate plan that allows you to do email and browse the internet. We're in a little different position because we strictly do wireless, so it's harder to do higher speeds, although 25 meg is something that can be easily accomplished with wireless. So I view us as a complement to the fiber optic network, where someone is in their home, they're using their fiber connectivity. When they're out in the field on their tractor, they're going to use our wireless service, but we still need to provide something, you know, in the 1 to 2 meg. We typically have a 5 meg, 6 meg, 12 meg, 25 meg, and if somebody wants to go up to a gigi, we can do a direct connection with a 1 gigabyte per second. And all of that, however, affects the back end of the network, and that's what a lot of people don't see and understand, where all of this has a cost to deliver to the internet. So, you know, if every home has a 1 gig network, we need many terabytes of capacity to take all of that traffic to the locations that it's going to. So, you know, one of the industry difficulties that we have is how do we set up those tiers so that they're fairly priced and so that people get the correct amount of capacity. So you see a lot of people referring to the tiers as up to, and up to is sort of a nomenclature that I find negative, because what does that mean? So if I buy an up to 25 meg plan and that particular provider has oversubscribed that, where they have the capacity to do 25 meg, but they have 100 people using 25 meg at the same time, everybody's getting less than 1 meg at that point in time. So there's a lot of frustration among consumers because they'll buy a 7 meg cable plan, which is, I have a 15 meg at my home in a suburb of Green Bay, and at certain times of the day, I can't get 100K, so I can't stream a video at that particular speed. So there's a lot of different providers and a lot of different infrastructure that's needed. So just because someone says we've brought broadband to this community doesn't mean that they've brought broadband to that community. It means they may have a pipe that is faster than other pipes that are in place, but it is quite a task to decipher how much speed you actually get.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about the state of broadband infrastructure in our region. We're here with Steve Schneider from Bugged Hustle Wireless in Green Bay, Emily Roziski from Vernon Communications Cooperative in Viroqua, and Chris Marion, Lafayette County Supervisor and Business Owner from Blanchardville. And so we're talking about, you know, kind of what is broadband as we begin this conversation on kind of the state of infrastructure. And, you know, Steve brought up some really interesting points of kind of what maybe companies are advertising, but, you know, how much internet do people actually need? And Emily, I wonder if you have any thoughts on kind of, you know, what is the standard that we really need to be going for in rural communities to kind of bring them broadband?
Yeah, I think Steve really hit the nail on the head. I think that there's a lot of confusion out there about what you need, and I think it really depends on what you're doing. You know, our lowest package is 5 meg, and then we go to 10 meg, which is kind of what we recommend everyone start at. And I think the reason for that is I think a lot of people, when you start talking about gigs and megs, they kind of get lost and glazed over. They don't really know what that means. So we try to bring it down in terms of what do you use it for? What do you use your broadband for? Are you just sending emails? Are you just surfing the web? Are you uploading files? Are you downloading files? So are you interacting? Are you video conferencing or Skyping? Those are all questions that we have to ask because I think that the levels are confusing for people, and you really have to talk about what they're doing with it. And so every home is different. And it's also the number of people, and Steve had mentioned that if you have a household with three teenagers who have iPads and smartphones and they're connecting to a wireless router, and you're watching Netflix and you're doing all kinds of things, you have a household of five, you're definitely going to need to be at 25 meg to be satisfied with your service. And then it's also understanding that you don't even know sometimes how many devices are using that connection, especially if you have a wireless router. There's smart everything these days that are connecting. And I think it's just a really confusing thing for people. So we definitely try to find out what they're using it for, what they plan to use it for, and then make sure that we get them into a package that is at least going to provide that service for them. So yeah, I mean, Steve, I think you covered it really well. There's a lot of deceptive advertising out there, and there's a lot of misunderstanding about that shared bandwidth, which is what he was talking about. There's dedicated bandwidth, and then there's shared. And so all of our members have dedicated. So if we tell you that you're going to have 10 meg, you're going to have 10 meg all the time. If you share that bandwidth, you're sharing with other consumers on that line. And so when everyone goes to watch their Netflix at 7 p.m., because that new show is out, everyone's going to see a deterioration in their service. So there's a lot of terms and there's a lot of information out there. It's hard to keep it all straight as a consumer, for sure.
As we talk about kind of what broadband is, you know, I want to touch on, you know, why is broadband important for rural communities anyway? And, you know, Chris, I wonder if you have thoughts on kind of the importance of broadband for rural Wisconsin.
I think we can't overstate, it's impossible to overstate the importance for rural communities, because we have issues like folks not being able to get healthcare access as easily as people in the city. So telemedicine for us is huge. Kids in school, we don't have the teachers, and we don't have the facilities. And so I know that when my kids were in high school, the honors type kids were doing a lot of classes online. And they struggled to do their homework at home, and there was limited time they could use the computers at school. And, you know, that's a real disadvantage for our kids. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, for rural communities who want to experience growth in population and in economic development, we have got to be able to provide good broadband so that people can have virtual-type businesses. So, you know, we have a lovely Main Street in Blanchardville. We're on a floodplain, so we can't expand in terms of industry on the edges of our town, but we have empty buildings on our Main Street, and we could fill those with commuters who want to live in a rural community and contribute but need to work elsewhere via their computer. And, you know, we currently can't do that. We can't attract those businesses. So that's huge for us.
Yeah, and Steve, I wonder if you also have thoughts on kind of, you know, why broadband service is important for rural communities.
I think it keeps rural communities both viable and relevant. And I think we see in some parts of our state and some parts of other states where small rural communities have simply died. There was a very nice little town called Grimms in Manitowoc County that, if you look at it 30 years ago, there were a couple of bars, there was a grocery store, there was a lime kiln, there was a implement dealer, there were probably 20 businesses. Today it's a curve in the highway because the businesses and the community did not remain relevant. And so I think that communities in rural areas have to remake themselves. And one of the ways you remake yourself is by the use of broadband. As Chris was stating, there's a lot of businesses that can be conducted in Blanchardville or Grimms or Darlington or you name the community, and they need the access to the rest of the world that's provided by broadband. So I think that it requires broadband to remain viable as a small community. Every industry, you know, whether it's a bank in town or where banks perhaps have outlets in smaller communities that are connected to broadband, you know, be it an ATM or be it a video service where you can talk to your banker without driving to Madison from Blanchardville, but you have a branch there that is connected by broadband. Agriculture and the particular communities that we serve and forestry are huge considerations. The amount of technology available to farmers where farmers can't use that technology because they don't have access to the wireless broadband that they need in order to be driving their combine through the field and fertilizing on one end and measuring yield on the other end and having that all go back to a central database that makes instantaneous decisions, or monitoring their irrigation systems where the Internet of Things or IoT is becoming a huge consideration where people don't even need to be in the mix in some cases. In some cases, it's animals and it's machines calling each other. One of my favorites is the fact that every cow ought to have a cell phone today, because an average farmer, dairy farmer, will lose somewhere between 2 and 3% of their herd often as a result of a condition called milk fever. And that can be prevented if a cow has a small detector put in their ear that has a small communication device on it that can communicate back to a computer and automatically dispatch the veterinarian to treat the cow, and it's something that will save the cow's life. Detection systems in terms of security of animals on farms. You know, if you have a cow that leaves its fence, sometimes the cow can get hit by a car on the road or whatever. And again, you can automatically detect if the cows leave the fence instead of waiting for the sheriff's department to call you and say someone complained that there's 20 cows in the middle of Highway B. So all of those things are important. We've started, my family does maple syrup in spring, and we've started putting detectors on the maple syrup collection unit so that we know when the sap is full instead of just letting it run onto the ground if it overfills, and it saves time and it creates efficiency. So the applications are beyond comprehension. I think that telemedicine as well in rural areas with the aging population of rural areas, again, anecdotally, you know, I had an aunt that was in her 90s, and, you know, she had the option of going to assisted living or staying on her farm. But if she stayed on her farm, there were going to be cameras installed and devices so that if she fell, you know, because she's out standing on a bushel basket hanging her laundry up, you know, in her 90s, and if she fell, she would, you know, no one would know about it, but this way her children could check on her and see what was going on. But, you know, that video on demand or that streaming video requires significant bandwidth. So that's an application that isn't 1 meg, that's an application that's 10, 12, 15 meg to be able to do things like that. So I think it really contributes to the quality of life.
Yeah, and Steve, you're talking a lot about, you know, all the possibilities that come with broadband. But, you know, Emily, I wonder if you can talk about kind of who are the people who don't have access right now, as, you know, in the state of kind of infrastructure, as we're still kind of, you know, trying to serve these rural areas.
You know, I think the people that generally go without that I've found in this industry are, I hate saying it, but ones that are served by larger national corporations. We have some competitors in our area, Frontier and Mediacom, CenturyLink, and generally they're not investing their dollars into the rural setting. They're looking at, you know, profit over people, which is not our model. And when they don't have the capacity to pay for the infrastructure development, they choose not to invest there. So you're seeing the investments in the urban areas, and the places that are getting left behind are the rural areas where you have three farms on a 3 mile stretch. So they are definitely around there. It's a challenge. I think I've seen to me, the local, some of them are private, some of them are cooperatives, but the smaller companies definitely seem to be doing more justice to the areas that they serve, listening to their constituents and their people a little bit more, and making those improvements. So we have pockets all around us that continue to ask us for service. It's definitely a challenge to see just across the border people that are struggling to get service, and there just doesn't seem to be a lot of interest in doing that.
Chris, I wonder if you can talk a little bit about some of the challenges that communities often face when they're, you know, trying to bring broadband service to their community. I'm sure that most places want to have broadband in their area, but, you know, what are some of the challenges or obstacles they might face?
I think that most communities want broadband, but not everyone in the community understands the value of it. Nor the trade-offs. And obviously, one big trade-off when you're in an area like Blancherville and the Driftless is you're going to need towers more than likely to get service out to everybody. And a trade-off there is that towers are visible. And someone is going to have a tower in their view. And that has been some of our struggle is that, while we want the attention of wonderful providers who will come out to the country, whether it's voluntarily or because we got a grant to invite them in, then we have to struggle with deciding and keeping our constituents happy and, you know, basically balancing all of the needs and desires. And I will say, I don't want to undervalue the importance of view sheds and of beauty to rural communities, because that is part of our appeal and part of the assets that we bring to the table is that we do have natural beauty. And so it may sound silly, but balancing those things is real in rural communities.
Emily, can you talk about in what ways the topography is sometimes a challenge to bringing broadband?
Yeah, I think the topography for us, it hasn't been a challenge because we're burying fiber. So, you know, a lot of parts of the country have a lot of really heavy rock, and even Upper Peninsula Michigan makes it very challenging to bury fiber, almost impossible. We don't have that challenge, but the topography where we are in the Driftless region does make it a challenge for cellular and a lot of the aerial stuff because they can't dip as well into the valley, or they strategically place you end up with a lot of them. And Steve can probably talk a little bit more about that. But I think for us, there hasn't been a whole lot of struggle. It's just covering a lot of miles. You know, I mean, it's a long project. It's not a fast investment or a quick project. So in terms of construction, though, we haven't had a lot of troubles with that for what we're doing.
Yeah, Steve, can you talk a little bit about, you know, kind of balancing what Chris was saying, of balancing maintaining people's views and not kind of getting in the way of that, but also bringing this infrastructure in?
The Driftless area is difficult because it is a environmentally sensitive area. It's a very beautiful area, and yet it's very difficult to get wireless service very far from a single tower. You know, in South Dakota, you can go 23, 24 miles from a tower. In southern Wisconsin and central Wisconsin, it's difficult to get more than 3 or 4 miles before you hit a ridge or you miss a valley. So that requires more towers. It does require a lot more sensitivity to siting, particularly to where people would like sites placed. It affects cost often because there may be a lower cost place to put it, but you work with the community to put it in the most desirable place versus the most cost-effective location. The other thing is just educating people about why you need more towers. It's also about educating people as to what the services can do once the towers are placed there, how fiber and wireless can work together to provide a complete package for what a customer needs, when you use what service, when you use what speed. So all of that plays in as well. A lot of the have-nots really don't know what broadband can do for them. So, you know, we've tried to consistently do a little program where it's a, you know, wireless university type package where people can come to the local town hall, you know, learn how you can use social media, learn how you use broadband for operating a small business from your home or community.
Steve Snyder from Bug Tussle Wireless in Green Bay is here with us today to talk about issues in providing and accessing broadband in southwestern Wisconsin. He's joined by Emily Roseski from Vernon Communications Cooperative in Viroqua and Chris Marion, Lafayette County Supervisor and Business Owner from Blanchardville. Coming up, we'll continue our conversation on the importance of broadband to regional communities. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. To hear audio archives of a Today Show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. For updates on future shows, links to our archives, and more, like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're continuing our monthly series on infrastructure systems in our region. Wisconsin lawmakers have created more funding for broadband expansion in rural areas over the last few years. But an estimated 232,000 Wisconsinites still don't have access to wired internet providers where they live. Communities in southwestern Wisconsin face many obstacles to accessing broadband, from the rural nature to the hilly topography. Joining us to talk about the current state of broadband in this region and what we need for the future are Steve Snyder, President and CEO of Bug Tussle Wireless, Emily Roseski, Member Relations Manager for Vernon Communications Cooperative, and Chris Marion, Lafayette County Supervisor and Business Owner. And Lafayette County has recently gone through a lot of the challenges and issues that we've been talking about when it comes to broadband. So, Chris, do you want to just kind of explain of when did these issues first start and what the journey you guys have been on and for, you know, providing broadband?
Well, I think that there are few people in Lafayette County under a certain age who would not argue that we are desperate for good broadband service there. Nevertheless, when we began to sort of roll out a program to bring more, there was some controversy. About a year ago, Southwest Regional Planning Commission helped us win a grant. We won both a state grant and a federal grant to bring out some more infrastructure. We were working with Comelec, which is, I believe, a provider out of Dubuque, that a lot of people in Lafayette County knew. They had provided service to our police department in Darlington, and they were familiar, and that was our choice. They kind of won the bid there to bring broadband in. And then suddenly we at the county board level started hearing that Bug Tussle was applying for lots of permits to put up towers. And while you would think that would be a good thing, it kind of freaked a number of us out because the townships weren't kind of coordinating with the county, and there was controversy. People were coming in to the county and saying they didn't want the towers in their backyard. It was going to obstruct their view. Other people were clamoring for better service. It was a bit of a maelstrom of confusion and differing priorities. And while as a county board we wanted desperately to have more broadband service, we also wanted to make sure that it came in an organized way. And I think Steve can kind of attest to the very personal nature of this story. We basically did not have a relationship with Bug Tussle, and that made it really hard for us to be happy that they were coming in with a lot of towers, because we didn't really know how to talk about it to our constituents. And I think we were really, really lucky that Steve was responsive. Our county board turned down a bunch of permits, even though it's questionable whether we could actually do that legally. We didn't want him in particular spots because a lot of people were unhappy about him. But we wanted the broadband. So we essentially wanted a relationship where we could work out some spacing that would work out for everybody. And I have to say, while we're not there yet, we're not finished yet, I feel like our situation of collaboration between our various providers of towers and broadband and the board, the county board and the townships, is something that's really pretty wonderful and should bring us a great situation in the end.
Chris, I wonder if, I don't know, if you've seen people's opinions of this issue change also.
I'm not sure that we're seeing it change yet. I think we're just at the tip of educating maybe our older population on why we really need this infrastructure. Our young folks don't need any educating, although the way broadband works and the different links and connections, as we've already heard in the first half of the show, is something that very few lay people can understand and struggle to grasp. I think once again, it comes down to relationships. I think when people can talk face-to-face about different priorities and not just see permits happening by public notice in the newspaper, but when they can talk together, whether it's at town halls or community meetings or even at the bar, about why we need broadband and what that's going to look like and what it's going to bring to us, I think that's when really that sense of pride that Steve mentioned, where we're a community that's looking to the future, that's trying to balance the priorities of lots of different people, but also take us into a situation where we can grow economically. The magic really happens always when people talk to each other face-to-face. And I think that that's beginning to happen, and I'm really looking forward to how that's going to roll out in Lafayette County.
Steve, I wonder if, what your thoughts are on, first of all, on kind of, the situation that's been going on in Lafayette County.
I think government worked very well in Lafayette County. I think that Lafayette County did what they were supposed to do as government leaders, and that is they listened to all sides. They made changes that were necessary for everyone, and ultimately they made decisions based on what was in the public interest. And I always have a lot of respect for community leaders who truly do what's in the public interest versus one small vocal group. We get petitions frequently in both directions. We will get 50 or 100 names from somebody who wants broadband, and we'll get 50 or 100 names from somebody who wants to prevent a tower from being built. And to me, the real measure of effective government is whether the government decision makers take those petitions from both sides and make a very educated determination on what is in the public interest. So I, frankly, have very warm feelings toward Lafayette County because, and I'm not getting what I want in Lafayette County. There's several towers that we're abandoning construction and we had signed leases on, but we're getting some other things, and we're getting a partner with the county's partner that was already engaged in the community. The county board, I believe, is a good partner in community engagement. We've been working toward doing a informational session together. Unfortunately, the time it takes to get contracts in place with various parties has delayed that, but ultimately we will have some type of community informational session, and all of that's valuable to everyone. It's valuable to the constituency, it's valuable to government leaders, and it's valuable to our company and the other companies that are functioning in Lafayette County. The education that we do affects not just the two providers that are, you know, putting up towers and providing additional broadband service, but it also, you know, affects the landline providers there who get customers who are better educated on what broadband is and the types of services in the community. So I wish we could have the type of decision-making process in every county that we have there, and it's hit and miss throughout the state. You know, we have had a phenomenal relationship with several counties during the Midwest Disaster Area Recovery bonding period, which goes back to the flooding in southern and central Wisconsin, and we did bonding in several counties that have really helped the economic development of those counties. It's had a real impact that we can see in Adams and Fond du Lac counties in particular. Sauk County, again, the county board did not vote with us. They voted against, but we've proceeded without that. And there's been a lot of changes of attitude there. And we continue to have success in that county. We continue to partner with the county board, but in a different manner than we did in some of the other counties. So I'm, very excited about what we're doing in Lafayette County. Greene County has been very good to work with. Vernon County has been very good to work with. Monroe County has been working with us. And it tends to be those counties that have more have-nots than haves. And so, you know, some counties where there's a large community that already has service may not have the same level of interest to get those rural areas outside of the city covered. And that's really where we're at with several counties that are a little more difficult right now.
And Chris, you know, I wonder what your thoughts are on, you know, how the situation in Lafayette County maybe represents the struggle a lot of rural communities go through.
When you're talking about infrastructure and build outs and basically the tussle between neighbors and, you know, balancing the good of everybody, you know, that's going to happen all over the place, everywhere. I think in a place like Lafayette, where we're primarily rural, we don't really have as many opportunities. But again, like I mentioned before, one of our greatest assets is the natural beauty that we have. You're going to have strong opinions about building infrastructure of any sort. I know a couple years ago we had controversy about improvements to highways, you know, because traffic will increase and that will be. That will be a negative for some people, of course. I think the strength of rural communities is that people do talk and communicate. And I think the challenge is for people to not write each other off and to not assume that they understand each other's motivation or each other's perspective, and to be really determined to understand each other's perspective. And I really appreciate Steve for being willing to work with us. We gave him a hard time. And he came right back into the community and, worked on building his relationships with the board and the township. And I think that's what we all need to do everywhere, all across America, for a lot of the issues we're facing right now.
Yeah, and it seems that kind of each county, each community is kind of left to kind of figure this out on their own. And I wonder, Chris, if there are any communities that you feel have really kind of done it right and are maybe doing really positive things that you're seeing across the state?
In terms of infrastructure, I don't know a ton about the broadband rollouts everywhere, but I do think that in places where there are good relationships between the board members themselves, trust between boards, and then trust between the townships and the county board, I think what's hard is the broadband conversation, like some other conversations in Wisconsin that are around development of various sorts. A lot of local control has been taken away. And while that removes some of the uncertainty for the developers, it really makes it hard for a community to feel good about what they come up with in terms of determining their own future. So what I like are communities who are being creative about maintaining local control or at least exerting local influence. I think it is difficult in Wisconsin right now to exert local influence over bigger economic development and infrastructure decisions. And I think that's where you're going to find a community that's proud of what they've built together.
And in the intro to this second half, I mentioned, you know, the state has been really working to create more funding for broadband expansion through the state's broadband expansion grant program. Steve, I wonder what your thoughts on this broadband expansion grant program.
I may differ from many people in the industry because we have taken advantage of very little in terms of grants and loans and so on. Anything that we've done through public bonding, so it's not something where you get free money. You pay it back and you do it in through conduit bonds with local communities and local counties. I don't believe that money is the issue. I think that I frankly am quite verbal with my legislators in Madison because I don't feel that we need more money for broadband. I think that we need more assistance on how to get it rolled out. I'm opposed to rolling back the tower siting law. I believe that even with that law in place, we can have good conversations as we've had in Lafayette and I believe most every other county that we've been to. And I see much higher priorities. You know, I'm very concerned that the historic tax credits are at risk right now because those are dollars that will not be picked up by multi-billion dollar companies that exist in the telecom area. Those are real, you know, Main Street economic development initiatives that don't cost state government a lot of money, but that are important to rural communities and all communities to preserve those structures. You know, we're investing well over $5 million in Lafayette County. You know, we will be investing close to $7 million in Vernon County. We will be investing $6 to $8 million in La Crosse County if they allow us to. The dollars are out there. You know, what we need help is with educational initiatives, cooperation, community engagement. And in my opinion, community engagement is really what Lafayette County brought to the table. It was telling us what's important to the community, telling us what the vision is for the community. And, you know, I don't know that we really care what the vision is. That's up to the local community. I care what the vision is where I live, but you know, that's up to Lafayette County. So we had a lot of good discussions on, you know, family farms and corporate farms and tourism and, you know, how many people do you want coming through this county? And so those are all things that I think play into the broadband infrastructure decision that are very difficult to talk about often. So I think that those communities that are willing to talk about what they really want to be will find that the resources are there. You know, if you have people, you have a business today. You know, I always, very often in community meetings, people will say, well, we don't need broadband. We have all old people here. Well, the biggest users of broadband are people who are in their 60s, 70s, 80s, if they're trained how to use it. The other thing is affordability. You know, we serve one of the lowest per capita income counties in the state. And the issue isn't access to broadband. The issue isn't the speeds. The issue is the ability to pay for broadband. And so, you know, my hope would be that instead of giving money to companies that really probably don't need the money, that we figure out ways in our state to engage our communities and educate our communities on how to use that resource and that infrastructure for economic development.
Chris, I know that you mentioned that Lafayette County did receive some grant funding, and very briefly, I wonder what your thoughts are on kind of investments from the state in broadband expansion.
We are very thankful for the investment we got And we're applying for more of those grants to get broadband out to areas in the county that didn't get it, that haven't gotten it yet. But I agree with Steve. I think there's a broadband is a political football. Who isn't for broadband? You know, it's easy to, as a politician, say I'm for broadband and I'm providing these. You know, we're going to provide this money. Well, already in the conversation today, we've seen how nuanced the concept and the actual provision of broadband has to do with all kinds of different infrastructure pieces, and the, you know, a kind of a broad scattering of grant money doesn't get into the nuances of what's really going to help, what's really going to address the issues. Like Steve has said, it's working with a community where you come to understand what is really needed and where the resources need to go. So I'm divided on the grants concept. I do think that we could make better use of our relationships with businesses and make it worth it for everybody. But yeah, I think, you know, the money's out there. We're going to try and get it. But is that the best way to address this issue? Probably not.
We've been talking with Chris Marion, Lafayette County Supervisor and Business Owner, Steve Schneider, President and CEO of Bug Tussle Wireless, and Emily Roseski, Member Relations Manager for Vernon Communications Cooperative, about increasing access to broadband in southwestern Wisconsin. Today is the fifth show in our monthly series on the state of regional infrastructure. Each month, we hope to explore new challenges and issues facing a different public system in western Wisconsin. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The executive producer for Newsmakers is John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer is John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers.